Streaming live 24/7. RadioInfluence.com.
This is the Valor Hour, powered by the law offices of Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl on Radio Influence. Your weekly glimpse inside all things Valor Fights, and a look at what's going on in the rest of the MMA community. Here are your hosts, the president of Valor Fights, Tim Loy, and your color commentator, Casey Oxendine.
Welcome to the Valor Hour. I'm looking to do everything Valor Fights, as well as the headlines from combat sports across the world. Thank you for joining us, and remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher. A huge thanks to our tremendous sponsor, Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl, for supporting our calls each and every week. This week, we look back at a big weekend in mixed martial arts and forward to a massive 2018 on the horizon. And as always, Valor Fights President Tim Loy will address your questions during the Valor Hour Q&A segment. I'm Casey Oxendine, and I'm joined by the president of Valor Fights, Tim Loy. Tim, Strikefest is on the books. Now we take a few weeks for the holidays, then right back at it for Valor Fights 47 and beyond.
That's right, man. We're done for 2017, 2018 looking really solid, and kind of relax a little somewhat this week with the holidays, especially towards the weekend, but really pumped to get our gears turning to these next few months, especially with January 6th, not 3 weeks away now.
Well, as usual, we are not alone here tonight. We are also joined by our esteemed colleague and crack shoot photographer. We're talking about Alan Poole. Alan, how are you doing tonight?
Yeah, I'm doing great, Casey. It's great to be here again.
All right. Well, that being said, let's get right on into the news. Strikefest 2 resonated from the Appalachian Fairgrounds Arena last Saturday night. And what an event to behold it was. We're going to do the official recap, which means we are joined by several of our panelists. Of course, we've already spoken with Alan Poole, but we also have Sawyer Rich and...
What's up, man?
And Roy Sanders.
I didn't know what you meant.
And Roy Sanders, the two guys who actually called the action there inside the arena. Roy, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. I'm great. I'm glad to be on the show.
Awesome. Well, without further ado, let's go ahead and get down to business and start talking about these fights. Of course, the fights kicked off with amateur Muay Thai competition. It was Derek Smith with a win over Rodrigo Gonzalez by unanimous decision. And that was a big deal because the panel actually picked against Derek Smith, all five panelists, and he comes out on top here. Guys, let's talk about it. Tim, firstly, give your take on the fight.
Yeah, well, just to kind of set everything up for the listeners, as you said, Roy and Sawyer were there at cage side. Alan was not there, but has watched the entire event on the Flow video. So he saw, the good footage of it. So everyone has seen all the fights at this point. And like you said, that was the one fight on the whole card that the whole panel got wrong. They went with Rodrigo Gonzalez, and he just couldn't get it going for whatever reason. And he's been in there in with tough guys his whole career, honestly. And so I don't think it was any kind of intimidation factor, but he just seemed real hesitant, especially the first round. He started to pick it up a little bit in the second and the third, but Derek did a pretty good job of keeping his distance. And every time that Rodrigo tried to do something, he just couldn't quite connect. And Rodrigo comes out unscathed, no injuries or anything. But on my card, he lost all three of the rounds, and a bit of an upset there. But Derek Smith comes in and gets a win to kick things off for the Elite Kickboxing Academy.
All right, Sawyer, you were calling the color side of the commentary on Saturday night. Give your take on this bout.
Awesome fight. I also made a good thing going. Derek looked great. I mean, he had a really strong tie base. I mean, you could just tell right off the bat. He kept that feed going. He just kept his distance well, and he ain't busting him up. I mean, Rodrigo just could not get to him. I mean, he would just whiff almost every time he would throw. He would get eat up with kicks. He would just every time there was a pause, he'd get eat up for the kick, and he just could not find his range whatsoever. So, you know, props, whatever. I was wrong. We were all wrong.
Roy, your take on the fight.
You know, we did not know who Derek Smith really even was before the fight, but now we do know, and I know that I will think twice before picking against him in the future. He come out, and he did everything, like, almost perfect. I would say he almost fought a perfect fight because Rodrigo, like we said, was kind of slow getting off. You know, he's more of a counter striker, it appeared. Just looking back at some of Rodrigo's fights from the last kickboxing tournament, you know, he just couldn't get off like everyone has said, and Smith just stayed busy. So, you know, he wasn't quite on a level of like a David Robbins or a Josh Hill, but he's definitely above. He's better than most, and I probably won't be picking against him in the future.
All right. Well, moving on to fight number two. It was a battle of the cruiserweights. Tim, I believe it was still cruiserweight, right? We had Gary Paul and you know, taking on Cephas Hewitt, who was a last-minute stand-in. Gary Paul wins by round one TKO, but Cephas Hewitt got a few licks in himself. Tim, talk about it.
Yeah, you know, that was the battle of the beards. These guys had two epic beards, and, you know, I wish that they had had a little bit more experience to have been able to lose the headgear. I think that was – the beards were just a major hindrance in that regard, you know. And, you know, Gary Paul is, you know, lives up to his name. He's very tall. Gary Too Tall Paul, he's very tall. And, you know, Cephas Hewitt steps in there and, you know, stands right there with him and a tough guy. And if I can recall, I mean, he caught Gary out of the gate with a really hard one that staggered him back. But he didn't jump on him. I think had he, like, jumped on him right there, the fight may have turned out differently, honestly. But he allowed Gary to gather his wits and start to come alive there. And right at the end of the first, I mean, there was no time left at all. I felt like he would have survived to the bell, but got stopped there with, I mean, a couple seconds maybe.
All right, well, let's take it to our panelists. Let's talk about it a little bit. Sawyer, what was your take on the fight? You and Roy were both there. What did you think of Gary Paul?
I mean, right out of the gate, it was just action, like Tim just said. I mean, Hewitt rocked him right as soon as almost the first or second exchange, and kind of took me off guard because I was like, oh, he's rocked. And then, you know, right after he just retaliates, and then Hewitt was rocked. You know, they were both getting rocked. And the headgear was a big deal because I feel like that was in both of their, it was just, they couldn't see, I don't think, half the time. And it was either one was getting rocked at any second. So I think it was just really who could see more and land the bigger shot and get the stuff. It was very entertaining. The awesome fight.
It looked like the chin strap was in Cephas's mouth.
It was, and yeah. I was looking there. I think you and I, Tim, were watching. And I was like, what's going on with that chin strap?
Yeah, that can't be good to be eating punches to the head. You can't breathe out of your mouth.
He was getting pissed. He was getting mad about it, and they couldn't do anything about it. They were trying to pull it down, and they couldn't get it.
But Roy, did you enjoy that fight?
It was definitely fun to watch. Like you guys said, you know, Cephas had the headgear with the chin strap, and that was really the determining factor in the fight for me. I mean, Paul was a big guy, but I really wasn't super impressed with his striking. But every time Cephas tried to do anything, that chin piece was riding up in his nose, up in his eyes. Like, it was like he was fighting blindfolded at one moment. So I really just wish that at some point they would have just took a break and took Cephas's off. He just would have been better off. But, yeah, it was definitely entertaining.
All right. Well, we're going to keep moving on, and I'm gonna stay with the kickboxing for this before we move on to the MMA. It was sort of split up during the event, but I want to, you know, just keep it in line here. The next fight I wanted to talk about was Julius Bowling versus Cody Young. Julius wins by TKO officially, but there was a little bit of dispute there. Tim, talk about it.
Yeah, that one was a bit of a mess. I mean, both guys landed some pretty good shots. Julius was definitely winning the fight. I think he got at least one knockdown in one of the first two rounds, and was likely well ahead on the scorecards, but several low blows, and then the fight ended, oddly enough, with what was a potentially a low blow, I guess. It was really hard to tell, but a low blow and followed by a knee to the head, which is illegal. They stopped it for what it appeared to be an injury or a foul, because he wasn't counted. But then when he couldn't continue, they called it a TKO. So it was really kind of confusing there. I know that Cody Young's coach, DJ Mackey, was unhappy with the way it was called. And Julius has said that he's more than happy to give him a rematch. We'll see if that happens down the road or not. But yeah, kind of a crazy one. That one was kind of all over the place.
Yeah. So Sawyer, what did you think about the fight? What did you think about the finish?
I mean, I at first I was like, come on, man, how many low blows are we going to call? You know what I mean? Like, cause it was like the third one or fourth one at that point.
Yeah, it was a lot.
But at first, it was a lot, man. I mean, it was just every time they would clinch, you would throw a knee, and it would be low. They're like the first one that they would throw in the clinch, just boom, just nut shot. And I'm like, oh, God, you know? Just kept happening. But I saw him drop, and I saw him get the finish. Then me and Roy watched the replay, and I think it was low. So, I mean, I'm not saying it was or wasn't, but it looks like to me on the replay that the finishing shot was low.
Roy, was so, it low?
Roy.
Yeah. Whenever
was it low?
Whenever he went, it was low. It was definitely low. Okay. The guy working the replay on Flo hit it right on the money. The problem was every time there was a low blow, you know, there would be like two or three knees following it that were legal. So, you know, the crowd was getting confused. Me and Sawyer were getting confused. You know, we would miss the illegal blow because there would be two or three that were legal that followed up, and then there would be a delay in the stoppage, and that's always kind of scary because, you know, if you're a fighter, you know, and the other guy grabs himself, you know, you're trained to keep hitting them, keep beating them up.
Yeah.
And if you're the guy getting hit, you know, you don't just grab yourself, you keep trying to fight. So, I mean, the fighters, the refs, we were all confused, and the last one definitely was illegal. Brandon did not start counting it whenever he went down. So initially when I was commentating, I thought, okay, it was an illegal shot. I think I even said, well, Brandon must have seen it. We didn't see it. And then I was really confused when they just went ahead and stopped it. I looked at Sawyer. I was like, you know, are they going to go to the judge's scorecard? What are they going to do here? But they just kind of ruled it like it was a TKO. So it was real confusing for me.
I think it's been a little challenging with the whole Muay Thai scene. You know, there were a few incidents back at the VFW Fight Night 2. But I think that what's going on is, you know, we've kind of had a transition from the K-1 rules style of kickboxing into the Muay Thai because it so much more closely relates to mixed martial arts. More fighters want to do it. It allows you to clinch and so forth. But with that being said, it also opens up much, much more possibility for those knees to low blows, you know, with the knees, because you're right in there close and, you know, they're so often that they're occurring. So, you know, you definitely, the referees definitely have to be very, very keen on that and be aware because you're going to see a lot more of those now.
Much more difficult for a referee to referee that over MMA, I would think.
Way more difficult because there's just so much more going on and everything's so close quarters. It's hard to see. But that being said, that was go ahead.
I'm sorry. Might I add, if I was in Julius's corner, I'd be yelling, "Don't clinch." He was doing just fine. Like, it was, you know what I mean? Like, he was doing absolutely wonderful. If just, and every time he would clinch, you'd get a low blow. I mean, you know what I mean? It was frustrating for me to watch. I was like, stop clinching, dude. You're going to get disqualified because every time you do it, you're going to get stuff for a low blow.
So in a straight boxing match, he was doing, yeah, I would agree. In a straight, if they were just boxing otherwise, and he was definitely winning, you know.
I was like, you're walking on thin ice, dude. Just stop, you know, like. For me, I mean, I was expecting the DQ if you kept hitting it, you know.
Well, there was certainly controversy. Now, that being said, there's no more controversy than a no-show literally 3 minutes, you know, before the fight begins. Really, as the fight begins, we're talking about Zach Fox and Tanner Perry. Tanner Perry was of course, the local. He was scheduled to face Zach Fox in Muay Thai competition. It was not to be. Tanner Perry's called out to the cage, and then no Zach Fox. Tim, do you want to break this down for us?
Yeah, really unfortunate incident there with Zach Fox, a guy that, you know, we have hosted a couple times before, never had any incident out of, and no issues. He'd missed weight the night before, I believe, by about 3 pounds. Didn't have a problem going and cutting the weight, made the weight. And right before that fight was to go, the locker room manager, Keone, he came up to me and said, you know, we've got a guy that's, you know, he's having a panic attack. He's not going to walk out. He's not going to go. And so I went back there to see what we could do, and it just wasn't going to happen, man. It was unfortunate. You know, I'm not here to bash on anyone. That who knows what's going through Zach's head at the time, you know, but certainly unfortunate, just and surprising more than anything. I mean, no knock on Tanner Perry, but certainly not the best opponent that Zach Fox has been in there with. He debuted against Josh Hill, who's a killer, you know, and so Tanner was a debut guy, you know, and really known to be more of a wrestler than a striker. So, again, just disappointing all the way around. Hopefully we can get Tanner back in there soon and Zach can get everything squared away on his end.
Absolutely. Now, Roy and Sawyer, I saw you guys kind of, you know, move back behind the drapes there and checking out in the locker room as they called Tanner Perry and then they called Zach Fox and there was no Zach Fox. What were you guys thinking, you know, as, you know, you're sitting there kind of leading into this fight and next thing you know, it's 10 minutes later and Zach Fox is still not inside the cage?
We just didn't know what was going on. I mean, at first, and they were like, something isn't right. And then someone told us, or maybe, well, we had our headsets off, because obviously the action stopped. You know what I mean? Like, we were talking to each other, and we're like, well, we've got to go see what's going on. And then we overheard someone saying, no, oh, Zach Fox doesn't want to fight. And we're like, oh, that's what's going on. And so we went back there, trying to find him. He was nowhere to be found when we were there. We were just trying to be like, come on, man. Like, I was trying to give him encouragement. You know what I mean? Like, very funny. But I did not find him back there. I don't know if Roy ever said we found him. I don't think he did. And we just moved on. I mean, that's it.
All right. Well, moving on. That concluded our Muay Thai competition, amateur Muay Thai competition. We move on into mixed martial arts competition. There was a lot of action there. First up, we had Aaron Phillips taking on Austin Kelly. Aaron finishes by TKO in round number one, and he looked really better than he's looked in a long time, Tim.
Oh, yeah. You know, Aaron looked good. You know, he was with the kind of a mystery in Austin Kelly. We didn't know what to expect. Very, very young. It was his birthday. He was just turning of legal age to compete that day, we come to find out. And a little starstruck potentially there. And Aaron Kelly or Aaron Phillips makes short work of him and really delivered a pretty violent ending to his evening.
Sawyer, what'd you think of Aaron Phillips coming back and get that big win?
I mean, he landed good shots. He looked great. He landed shots over the top. Austin Kelly, you know, seemed to be a little stiff. You know, he couldn't, his stance was a little bit, he looked a little nervous maybe. And I mean, I can totally relate, man. No big deal. It's your debut. You're 18 years old today, you know. And this guy's 1-4, very, very deceiving 1-4. Very deceiving. It hits real hard. Got great, great hands, great stand up, and got the finish. Landed a great shot.
All right, Roy. Anything of note that stands out in this one?
Yeah, just on a weird note, we had watched The Christmas Story that day, the day before the fight at school, and I was thinking about Ralphie and the Pink Bunny outfit. And Austin Kelly, when I looked at his footwork when the fight started, was bouncing around and hopping like a bunny rabbit. And I immediately thought about that movie. It was just so strange that I'm sitting here watching the fight and I was thinking about Ralphie in a pink bunny costume. But I knew when I seen him bouncing around like that and the way Aaron was throwing good clean shots that he was going to go to sleep. You know, that is what happened.
There was a hopping episode.
There was, yeah.
All right, fair enough. Well, moving on, next matchup featured Antoine Mosley taking on DeAndre Mays. And this one was very, very violent, up and down, lots of action there. Antoine Mosley wins via guillotine choke in the start of round number two, 29 seconds in. Tim, talk about it.
Yeah, back and forth, man. I knew that this one was going to be a fun one. And, you know, Mosley is very aggressive and comes out swinging crazy with everything behind everything. And is really big, you know, thick guy at 145. Of course, training with a bunch of killers there at X3 in Atlanta. And I think he had a deceiving record. You know, his record, not great. But if you look up and down his record, you see he's fought some really, really good dudes. And, you know, DeAndre Mays is a guy that, you know, didn't have a lot of fights, but has been training for several years, not a, you know, more experienced in training and whatnot than your typical one in one guy. So, you know, the first round was really close. They exchanged early, and Mosley went for a throw and ended up on the wrong side of it and in mount for a large portion of the round. Mays is in mount, but then at the very end, you know, Mosley turned it on and started tagging him and kind of came back and maybe stole the round. I don't know, maybe not. It was close. Really made it really close. And then all of a sudden in the third round, it was just over. You know, a guillotine in just the first you know, first half minute or so, and Mosley gets that win.
All right. Well, panelists, talk about this fight. I think this one was, you know, leading into the pro side, was one of the candidates for fight of the night.
Super entertaining. I mean, back and forth. Hard. I mean, very, very close fight. I mean, leading up, I feel like, especially like in the beginning, you know, it was, you know, back and forth. I think that Mosley was landing the, you know, double jab straight combo. I think that he had him with that set up great, a great shot, like two or three times, just boom, right in the back of the ear, like right behind the ear. Wobble. I mean, I feel like that it was very competitive. And then, like, right at the end there, just the first half minute of the round, boom, getting over. And I didn't really think that he was going to get it that early. You know what I mean? It was kind of a, whoa, action stopped. So, very entertaining. Fight of the night for me up until, like, I don't know, man, up until the pro card, as far as amateur, it was definitely most entertaining for me.
All right. Roy, what'd you think, man?
Yeah, I really enjoyed that fight. I mean, that was definitely the most pedigreed fight, I felt like, on the amateur side. You know, two great schools. Great action back and forth. The first round was over, and Sawyer asked me to call it, and I remember I couldn't call it. I mean, the first round was really tough. Both guys were really technical, and I think it boiled down to, like Tim was saying earlier, Mosley was just a huge 45er. I mean, he was ripped to the shreds, and I think that, you know, when both of their techniques kind of clashed, it turned into a strength game. And I think that, you know, Mosley, when he finished that guillotine, I think it was an arm in, but it didn't matter because you could see every muscle in his shoulder and back popping out when he was squeezing, and I think that was the difference.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, just a word of note for everybody that wants their guillotine to be great, do those bicep curls. Everybody says a bicep curl doesn't have anything to do with strength. I'll tell you right now, you pick those biceps, your chokes are going to get better, whether it be guillotines, rear nakeds, all those things, okay, and your forearms as well. Moving on, our next matchup was high octane as well. Luke Frankowski taking on Jay Vernon. Frankowski wins via rear naked choke. He gets a few highlights there on Flow Combat for that big slam that he got, and just looked very, very aggressive in this fight, Tim.
Yeah, that was the one that I was anticipating because, you know, Jay Vernon and him and Luke were both debuts, and Vernon coming in with a good amount of, you know, amateur boxing experience as a teenager, and both these guys very young, and, you know, Vernon came in a lot under what we expected. You know, I was, he had told me he was going to be 160 pounds and came in, you know, like 151, 152. So he was definitely outsized. I told him he needs to be, you know, at 145 here moving forward, but, you know, very game and scrappy kid, but, you know, Luke, Frankowski is got kind of that it factor going for him. You know, he's got a great look. He's very athletic, very personable kid. And if he stays with it, he could be something special. You know, he's definitely got a, you know, a bright future if he sticks with it. And, you know, very explosive out there, very strong. And it'll be interesting to see him take a little step up in competition next time.
Absolutely. All right. Sawyer, what'd you think about this fight?
One word, overwhelming. What that was like, he just, I mean, he got a mass massive slam right off the bat. I mean, just boom. And from there, I'm pretty sure he got two, maybe three slams in that fight. It was a very dominant performance by Fronkowski that I mispronounced on Slow Combat, I believe. So,
amongst other
things. I don't know. Yes, yes, I did. Thank you, thank you for that, Loic. But, no, really. Awesome, though. Awesome, awesome performance. I agree with him, though. I think that he's got a lot of potential, that Beckett does. And he could definitely use a step up in competition and maybe a lightweight MMA.
Roy, your take, man.
Yeah, you got to love Vernon for even coming out. You know, unlike Fox, you know, he should have been the one maybe having the panic attack because he was very Fronkowski was way bigger. But, you know, Vernon came out there and he competed. You know, that's what you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to stay in the back and run away. And he showed up. And Fronkowski reminded me of like a hybrid of Kevin DePriest and Jonathan Pierce. I mean, I feel like – and that's a deadly combination. So I feel like – you know, the future's bright for him, and I can't wait to see what he does next. I mean, he had the physique. He had the slams. Like to maybe see him get his hands up, but other than that, you know, he looked really good.
All right. Well, moving on, we had some big heavyweight action. This is another one where one of the fighters pulled out last minute. We had to get a last-minute replacement. We were able to do that. Dale Dodds back in action against Ricky Jones. Dale gets the round one submission via arm triangle and looking really good, Tim.
Yeah, you know, he's definitely an impressive guy that, you know, coming in, he was a really tough 0-1, dropping his debut to a really, you know, tough guy. And Dale is just a big strapping, you know, tough, strong guy. He fights Ricky Jones, who steps up on short notice and, you know, fought pretty admirably, honestly. I mean, he really didn't offer a whole lot as far as offense goes, but, you know, when he was giving up the takedowns pretty easily, but, you know, doing a, you know, fairly admirable job of keeping Dodds kind of contained and keeping him, you know, kind of pressed down on him to where he couldn't get up and just rain down so many blows, and lasted probably a little bit longer than what most would have expected, honestly. So props to Ricky Jones and Dale Dodds both for, you know, putting on a good performance.
All right. So Sawyer, talk about this fight a little bit. I know that you like the heavyweights. The heavyweights always sling the leather. But Dale Dodds, a big monster of a beast, huh?
Oh, I mean, yeah, impressive. Great transition. I mean, just the whole time, just like Tim said, it was hard for him to posture up and rain on some heavy shots. So props to Ricky Jones for taking the fight. And I agree. I think that it was a admirable performance by him. Admirable. And I was impressed with him, and I was impressed with Dodd's transition to the arm triangle. Great, great finish, and great fight.
Roy, are your thoughts on Dale Dodds as a heavyweight, a rising star in the heavyweight division here in this region? You've seen a lot up there in Southwest Virginia, particularly. You know a lot of those corn-fed big heavyweights. You've seen him come up along the way. What do you think of Dale Dodds?
Yeah, I think that his body type is going to be what kind of puts him over the top if he keeps training with Bushido and those guys. You know, he's just built like a Mack truck. I mean, he's huge. And, you know, it's not like I don't think he was like a 265. I mean, he was just like a big, maybe, I mean, I don't know what his weight was. He looked to me like probably about 240, just kind of like a Cain Velasquez body type, just big, but not too big. And, you know, I think that if he continues training at Bushido, that he's going to be one of the top prospects, definitely in the amateur division in this area.
All right. Well, moving on, next matchup was a catchweight at 180 pounds. We saw Logan Buck taking on Devin Chambers, and that one ended in favor of Logan Buck. He takes it by TKO in round one, and a little bit of controversy there. Devin Chambers didn't appear to be happy after that one, Tim.
Yeah, pretty pretty dominant performance from Logan Buck. Uses his wrestling, gets him down, and worked for a choke for a little bit, and didn't get it, and eventually just started the ground and pound and got the finish. Devin Chambers came in pretty good shape. Looked to be ready, but just we hadn't seen him in a while. It'd been a few years since we'd seen him fight, and he came back looking like he was prepared to go, but didn't have an answer for the wrestling of Logan Buck ultimately, and was pretty angry at the end of the fight, saying they got hit in the back of the head several times. I went back and watched it, man, and he may have taken one in the flurries, but it certainly wasn't consequential, I don't think. And so ultimately not a lot of controversy from my end. I think that, the refs did a good job on that one.
Yeah, Sawyer, what did you think about it, man?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. He did not have an answer. I mean, Logan Buck's wrestling was just dominant. It was very aggressive and hard for him to stop. He just didn't have anything to do against it to counteract that. And I don't think that there was anything really controversial. Like Tim just said, he may have taken a shot, but it was so unintentional. He was just trying to get the stoppage and throwing punches is what it was. I mean, that happened so many times. And just because you get in the back of the head does not mean, you know what I mean? You can't look at the ref and say, hey, you hit me in the back of the head because you're about to eat 10 more, dude. I mean, you know what I mean? Get out. That's the whole thing. So I will always tell anyone, like, do not stop and look at the ref. Like, just work to get out of it. And, because you're going to get stopped regardless. So good fight, good performance by Logan Buck. And I was impressed with his wrestling for sure.
Roy, do you agree with all that?
I do. It was a good stoppage. Nothing burns me up more when I'm cornering or coaching or playing the couch coach on a UFC fight than when somebody is on all fours taking shots and it gets stopped and they immediately get up and are upset. If they are immediately able to get up and be upset, then you could have maybe turned over on your back and, mount's not good, but it's better than getting stopped. Or you could have monkey rolled, you could have went crazy, spazzed, whatever. I mean, if you have that much energy, why not just try to do something? Don't just sit there and wait on to stop it so you can get up and argue. I don't like that. So that's where I stand on that.
Well, there we have it. That being said, that does it for the amateur side of the card. It was time for the big pro lineup. We had three big ones there. It started off with heavyweight action. Big Philip McLaughlin taking on Mike Thomas. We call him Big Mike. And it was Philip McLaughlin's night, man. He takes it by unanimous decision. He was just able to keep Mike on the end of his punches, land that big right hand. Of course, Mike Thomas, he had a big head. He's hard to hurt, but Philip looking good, Tim.
Really, man, really impressive performance by Philip McLaughlin. Just essentially, it was a boxing match. I don't think we had any takedown attempts. There was maybe two or three kicks total from a McLaughlin, just maybe one per round. It was essentially a boxing match. And I think if most people would have thought that that was going to be the case, they probably would have picked Michael Thomas all day long. But ultimately, McLaughlin has some very deceptive reach. And he did an awesome job of figuring out that distance early and keeping it the entire time and had Mike just swinging it at air and missing a lot. And, Mike probably arguably maybe threw more, but just couldn't land. I mean, he was just whiffing all night, and McLaughlin just 1-2, 1-2, steady, basic footwork, kept moving, and just really kind of fought a really good, smart fight. Even though he fought his opponent's fight, really, he just fought it better. And McLaughlin improves to 2-1 and kind of gets his name back on the scene, after bouncing back from a loss to Chandler Cole. Mike Thomas, in good spirits afterward, took some, it didn't seem like he was ever really hurt, but McLaughlin just, his accuracy was good, and he cut him in two really bad places around the eyes and just had Mike, just never could get inside of that long reach. And so really impressive win by McLaughlin.
Roy, I remember you called it. You made your pick for McLaughlin, and he's a guy that you've known very well there in Southwest Virginia, and you knew going in that he was going to be a heavy hitter. Talk about, from your perspective, your thoughts on this fight.
Yeah, it went exactly the way I thought it would, almost. I thought that, you know, McLaughlin would start tagging him, you know, using the reach, which he did. I thought that in the second or third round that Mike would be forced to go for a takedown. And even when I was calling it, I thought, you know, Phillip was throwing a 1-2 all day. That's all he threw the whole fight. But the two kept finding a home. So I just could not understand why maybe when things were going south and Mike was getting a little slower, why not maybe go for the takedown? Because I know training at D3, he's trained it with Brendan back in the day. You know, he's trained at a lot of places that work the ground, work takedowns, work jiu-jitsu. So I would have loved to have seen him try to utilize that. But McLaughlin was just waiting on Mike to throw that jab. And every time he would throw the jab, McLaughlin just threw a 1-2. And it was connecting because of the reach. And the more that he tagged Mike, the slower Mike got. It wasn't that Mike got tired. It's just when you start taking punches, especially in a boxing match, you slow down. So the slower he got, the more that McLaughlin's right hand got through. So,
yeah, and the footwork as well. You could noticeably see the footwork. That's one thing. Mike is a tank, and ultimately, you know, I've seen him go through round after round and take, you know, an absolute beating and still walk through it. You know, but that being said, you know, McLaughlin was just scoring and landing too much. Sawyer, had you picked Mike Thomas or McLaughlin? I don't have my cheat sheet in front of me.
I picked McLaughlin by KO.
Okay, and what was your take on the fight?
I mean, he fought awful. The whole fight was good. I mean, it was good. I kind of started feeling for my car because you could just see in his eyes he wanted to get there so bad, and he was just kept with his shots. I mean, just he was throwing more. He had a more thrown punches, just way less landed. I mean, and he was just getting tagged with that jab overhand, right in the butt every time. And every time, like Roy just said, he would just—he wasn't getting hurt. He was getting frustrated. He was getting very frustrated because he could not reach it. You know, like it was almost like he was like, "Well, I'm throwing. I mean, you know, but I'm not landing. So why even throw?" You know, it was almost like that. It was that look of frustration. And McLaughlin staying calm. He just—he never got what I was impressed with. He never got overly excited because he was obviously ahead. I mean, and he knew it. He could see the frustration too, and he never really overcommitted and got himself hurt. You know what I mean? And took a risk. He just stayed right there and just 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, and it was landing all night. And a great fight, great performance. He's definitely one to be weary of, I guess, with the hands. The footwork was awful enough.
I'm very excited to see what happens with both of these guys, win, lose, or draw. They're always fan favorites and exciting to watch. Moving on, it was time for our co-main event of the evening. It featured Jonathan JSP Pierce taking on Nick Haymaker Baker, a bit of a grudge match, if you will. JSP wins round two TKO, and it was very, very brutal. These guys went head to head. Talk about it, Tim.
Yeah, man, brutal is a great description. It was, man, you know, first off, I give props to Nick Baker. You know, it was he hung in there and was fighting back to the end. You know, all the way to the bitter end. He was trying to do something to win and hang in there, but just outclassed everywhere. Ultimately, JSP was, you know, just throwing viciously and hard on the feet, tagging him, dropping him, had Baker shooting for takedowns, and it almost felt like he was carrying him into the second round there to punish him more. And it wasn't too long into the second round, a minute or so into the second round. You know, he had Baker really hurt against the cage. Baker dropped and rolled for like a footlocker or something. And I was like, man, that's not going to be good, you know, because that just left JSP right on top of him to put the hammer down and ultimately finish the fight. You know, a lot of injuries there for Nick Baker. So hope he heals up quickly. And JSP moves to 7-3 with a very dominant win and some improved mic skills afterward on his post-fight, may I add.
Yeah, he's certainly, that's something that he's focusing on. JP, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, every day after training and so forth, you know, we spend a little bit of time, the whole crew, and we kind of cut up and do all those things. And he's realizing that, you know, that those experiences, those can translate right on into the fight world. You know what I mean? And you can start to verbalize and express yourself even better. And so, man, he's just really opened up a whole lot, and it's really been exciting to see, because it's something we've always seen in him. But when he gets out there and people put the mic in his face, in the past, you know, he was hesitant about it. Now he's very excited about it. He wants people to know who he is, project who he is. And, you know, a lot of experiences that he's been through in the past is particularly, you know, what happened, you know, when he broke his own jaw, several years back, you know, that's stuck with him for a long time ever since then. And it really has propelled him to another level. That being said, Sawyer, you were there calling the action. What was your take on the fight?
I mean, very dominant performance by the AFC, but I mean, Nick Baker's defense fought back. I mean, was very game the entire time. I mean, he was getting dropped and getting back up with, you know, just haymaker after, you know, trying to connect and just whipping the shot. JFC standing on the outside and just waiting for him, just boom. I mean, just right down the pipe and hit him. You know, just wait. He'd wait for him to throw like a big shot and boom. And right at the bat, like right when they came out of the gate, Baker got rocked. And I could just see it that JFC smelled blood. And I was like, okay, this is about to happen. And it was, man. That was the story of the fight. So also on another note, Baker and the mouthpiece deal was at the time we thought he kept spitting out, and maybe he did once, but I think that of course his jaw is broken, so I mean that is obviously why that was happening, because I know Jimmy Neely kept taking, you know, putting it back in and stopping, and I heard him say, listen, don't spit out anymore, and Baker was just frustrated. Of course, Jimmy Neely did not know at the time that his jaw was broken, but that was, the action was stopped a few times due to that. But awesome fight, awesome performance for JFC.
Absolutely. Roy, what was your take on the fight, man?
Yeah, I mean, I was really scared for Nick the whole fight once it got underway. He was just totally outmatched, outclassed, and, you know, it was kind of scary for me sitting there watching it, because I was thinking, man, you know, because I could see Nick just fighting through it, just throwing caution to the wind. He was like, you know, he's going to go out on his sword, and, you know, with the mouthpiece and just the way he was getting hit and the way JST was carrying him, because I do 100% believe that JST could have finished him about four times that first round and just backed off, just kind of toying with him. And, you know, I can't say enough about Nick for just continuing to go out there and try. Like Tim was saying, I hated when I seen him go for that knee bar or whatever he did, because I thought, man, you know, this has been bad enough. It's about to get worse. And let that be a lesson to some people, too. I mean, I just feel like that was a really bad fight for Nick, but I know it was public on Facebook and he wanted it. So, you know, it's kind of on him. But just be careful, especially on the amateur side, of who you fight, and make sure you're ready, because that was kind of the result. We got to see what could happen, you know.
Well, I want to say this too. Of course, I was cornering against Nick, and you know, when we get ready for a fight, you go to war, and you do everything you can to beat the opponent. But that being said, we definitely take our hat off to Nick again for continuing to battle over and over again. I mean, even, you know, he never concluded his antics until he was done. You know, I mean, he fought his style and he came to fight, and it made a very entertaining show for the fans. And so, you know, you never like to see an injury like that. You know, you want to win, but prayers and thoughts to Nick and his family here at the holidays and so forth, and we hope that he heals up and comes back and fights, because he's actually one of my, you know, favorite fighters to watch, one of the most entertaining. So that being said, moving on to our main event, it was in the lightweight division, and it featured Nathan Williams taking on Stephen New. Nathan Williams wins round one via anaconda choke. And, you know, it was a pretty dramatic finish there, Tim.
Yeah, man. Nasty Nate. It proves how nasty he is. Well, once again, with another first-round submission. And,
you know, Stephen New looked like he came in ready. You know, he looked like he was in really good shape. Seemed like he was dialed in and ready for a big fight. And man, had a good crowd there. Nasty Nate, he put him, you know, he kind of quieted him down there with a first round Anaconda that was just beautiful. Honestly, it was a beautiful setup. It was just, you know, picture perfect. Just honestly, a potential like submission of the year type finish, and moves him to 7-3 and ready to fight for that Valor and featherweight title.
Man, Nathan Williams is what you would call a natural heel, particularly here in the Tri-Cities region. You know, that those antics after the fight, I mean, he was really playing to not only to the fans, but playing to Flow Combat, basically, you know, setting himself up to move on to that next spot, which we know is potentially the Valor Fights Featherweight Championship. We're, you know, so we're excited to see that happen. Sawyer, talk about what you saw in this matchup.
Nathan Williams, very athletic coming out of the gate. Looked very strong. Stephen New, he was very frustrated. I talked to him after the fight, and I said, listen, man, you didn't really do anything wrong. You were just fighting a guy that probably drills that choke and that, you know, turtle position that, you know, sprawled out. And I believe that Stephen fought shot a takedown, or there was some kind of scramble there. I believe Stephen was trying to get the takedown. It was an intention, and he just got caught in that position. And I saw as soon as Nathan Williams locked that up, I was like, as soon as he grabbed the bicep, I was like, this is over. You know, I didn't say that, but I was like, well, he's about to roll. And, of course, he did. And beautiful, beautiful Anaconda show. Beautiful setup, beautiful. The entire performance was beautiful for Nathan Williams. And very happy, very dominant, I thought. So I was impressed with him for sure.
Roy, what do you think about Nathan Williams in that performance? And then, of course, moving on to the featherweight championship matchup.
Yeah, I think Nasty Nate come out there, and that couldn't have went any better if he dreamed it. I mean, I don't think that New or anybody in the crowd or myself or maybe even Nate thought that he would win with that nice of a submission that quickly. You know, it was really quick. It had to be disappointing for Steven because, you know, he's put in a lot of time. And then to go in and kind of get caught that quickly in something, it's real frustrating. It kind of happened to me in my last fight. You know, I got subbed really quick, and it's just, you feel like you didn't even get a fight. You know, it's kind of odd. And with him taking such a long time off when he came back, you know, I'll be interested to see how he rebounds on that. And as far as Nate Williams, I think I could see him winning that gold because he's on a roll. I mean, he's beat three really, really good fighters. And I'm looking forward to seeing him fight for that belt.
Yeah, undoubtedly.
Let me add. I know that you are JSP's coach, Austin Dine, but I think that I would love to see Nate Williams versus JSP. They're both 7-3, both around the same weight. You know, Austin fight.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, we'll, you know, of course, we got to see what comes up, you know, later this year.
Of course, yeah.
Because you know, Nathan Williams, you know, obviously looking to be primarily in the featherweight division, but JP always open for super fights for sure. And you know, that's one thing is I think that JP is going to stick. He fought, you know, at the 100, I guess the at 150 officially, you know, with the added allowance, you know, right under 152. That being said. That, you know, that was a big struggle for JP again. JP's going to stay at that 155 mark. You know, and those losses that came in the past came at 45 and at 50 catch weight. You know, I think that he's just a little bit bigger, and he's going to stay right there at around 155. Much respect to Nathan Williams. We talk all the time. You know, X3 is kind of a, you know, has a connection with Seneca. And so we've always known each other, and we've always had a lot of respect for him, caught a lot of their fights. And I look forward to seeing a big career out of him. But, you know, down the road, that's one guy that you know, we would be, you know, proud to step up against. He's a very notable opponent and very, very tough and definitely a rising star for sure. So, yeah, I take that, you know, what you say to heart for sure. That being said, that does it for the official Strikefest 2 recap.
Who came out the best? I got to think Roy probably came out the best. He only missed two.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Who did?
Sawyer, you missed more than two, didn't you?
I don't even know, man. I feel
think
like
you
that
did.
Well, let's see. I think that. I think Sawyer missed a couple early in the early goings.
Yeah, I think Roy, with only missing two, Roy's probably our unofficial winner. We're going to start keeping better track of this shit starting in the new year.
Okay, hey, wait. What about the we all picked against the Derek Smith kid? Is that right? His last
name? Yeah, Roy missed that one.
Wasn't the rule that he gets to come?
He's going to be on here. He's going to be on here tonight. He's going to be on the Valor Hour tonight. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, we have to give him his, and so you'll have to listen. Go back and listen, and then you'll see what he had to say if he takes any shots at you.
Oh, I'm sure he will.
He said he was ready to go pro and fight that Sawyer Rich feller.
Yeah, that's totally what he said.
<Keep on moving. laughs> All right. Well, that being said, that does it for Strikefest 2, and that closes out a big December for our lineup of fights here in the region. But immediately following New Year's, we're talking the week after, it's going to be Valor Fights 47, January 6th. That's at the Knoxville Coliseum. And Tim, before we close out this part of the news, real quick, give a little plug. We've been talking about it, but give a little plug of what's the most recent occurrences here. Of course, we've got AJ going to be a part of it. We've got Shamir. We've announced Shamir, and so many others. You mentioned. Can we even talk? You've mentioned Lynn Cook back in action.
Yeah,
so,
man.
So give us a real quick rundown before we move on.
Yeah, man. It's kind of one of those like rising stars kind of cards, and also a throwback at the same time. So, you know, we got Lynn Cook making his return. He's fighting John GQ Henning in a pro Muay Thai fight. It's been several years since Lynn's competed, and John, as we know, always brings it and is a very tough and skilled competitor. So we know that's going to be a great pro fight. We've got Keith Olsen and Alex Riggs also going to be a great pro fight. We added Jordan Weeks versus James Conway out of Warriors Den, and made his pro debut last week and beat Nick Martino. So he's 1-0. And then Jordan Weeks, we know well, out of Fitness Edge, he'll be coming out here with the teeny Candris, who's fighting Yinsi Alcantara. We've got four female fights, between Shamir Peshewa and Natalie King, and Olivia Parker and Erica Camp, and as the aforementioned Fatini versus Yancey fight. And then we've got Shea Holland coming up from Georgia with Knuckle Up to take on another highly touted prospect out of Shield Systems, and Emily and Zulis. And so we have four female fights. We're excited for that. And a whole lot more. We added a lot more, like, pretty good tie fights. Nick Jewell and Wes Marnark, that's going to be a battle. Steven Tanner, Rodrigo Gonzalez. So just several more really good action fights. I think it's going to be awesome card.
All right. And remember, get your tickets now at Ticketmaster.com. January 6th, right there at the Knoxville Coliseum. You don't want to miss it. That does it for the news, which means it's time for this week's Valor Hour Q&A segment. We have a great list of questions from our listeners this week. So without further ado, Tim, let's get down to it.
Let's do it.
All right. Question number one. If you had to sum up 2017 for Valor Fights in one word, what would it be?
Roller coaster.
All right. Fair enough. Question number two. What's the biggest thing you learned this year from an MMA perspective, and what's your biggest regret of 2017 from an MMA perspective?
As for the regret part, I don't guess I have any regrets. That's a true answer, because one thing I've learned to fall back on the first part of the question is, this whole thing is a learning experience, and I've learned some very expensive lessons, and I continue to learn expensive lessons, but hopefully I don't make repeated mistakes, and so I won't say that I've got any regrets. I've paid for some lessons.
All right, fair enough. Next question: what is your Valor Fighter of the Year, Fight of the Year, Knockout of the Year, and Submission of the Year?
Golly, man, that's putting me on the spot. This doesn't even seem fair, honestly. Can I push like some sort of year end agenda here?
Well, I think they're gonna have to go to the boards, and they're gonna have to help us select them.
Yeah. That I feel like that's really just too much for my mind to comprehend just on the spot.
All right, fair enough. Next question. Which Valor fighter do you think is going to have the biggest 2018?
Oh, that's a good one. Okay, let's see. I see, man, and I always like throw out multiple names, and so I can only do one. And so the first one that I think that just like kind of pops in my head, I think, is Luis Pena, and I just think he's really primed and just kind of like, you know, really got that desire right now to go to the next level. I think he's got the right connections, he's got good management, great look. So I'm gonna go with Luis Pena amongst many others. You know, like just honorable mentions. You know, to JSP and Sweet T, Lindsey Jones, Sid Wheeler. I mean, Jason King. So many more that could very well have breakout years. You know.
All right, fair enough. Final question: are you making any New Year's resolutions personally or for the promotion?
Yeah. You know, I gotta say. For the promotion, my resolution, I think, is to kind of scale back on doing, you know, necessarily so many shows and really just trying to do, you know, quality shows. And, you know, if that means we only do, you know, 9-10 shows next year, but they're all real good, high quality shows, then that would be, you know, that's kind of what I want to go towards.
All right. Well, that being said, that closes out another Valor Hour Q&A segment. Remember, listeners, send in your questions each and every week, and President Tim Loy will happily answer those for you on air. Now, with that being said, it is time to get on into our interviews for this evening. Well, this week, we are joined by our first Redemption guest. During our Strike Fest preview last week, this man was picked to lose by all five panelists, but defied the odds, coming away with a unanimous decision victory. Please welcome to the Valor Hour, Derek Smith.
What's up, guys?
What's up, Derek? As we always, I don't know if you've been listening to the Valor Hour or not, but hopefully you do. We give our picks. Well, we, meaning they, the picks panel, not myself or Casey, but we do a picks panel each week. And the picks panel, of course, starting last week, we said if they go unanimously, if they go 5-0 against a guy, and that guy pulls off the upset, then you know, we owe that guy an interview, his chance to come on the show and say his piece, and you know, kind of like, hey, you know, I proved all you guys wrong. So you know, Derek comes in and fights a tough Rodrigo Gonzalez, a guy who everyone picked. And you know, I don't think it was any slight on Derek. I think the thing was, it was Derek's first Muay Thai fight, you know. And Rodrigo, a guy that's had, man, I don't quote me on this, but he surely had 15 fights combined between MMA and Muay Thai fights. So I think just by experience, most guys probably would have picked him. But, man, you really kind of shut him down. I had you winning all three rounds, 30-27 decision, and he never could really just get comfortable in there with you and pull the trigger. He's a guy that is usually very active and just in your face, and he never really seemed to be able to do that. And so props to you, Derek. A great win for yourself and your team, and talk a little bit about it.
Thank you, man. Well, we trained hard for that. Tyler, he's a really good coach, and I have really good partners. And I don't know, through the whole thing, I just felt like he couldn't see a single opening. And I mean, I've seen a few on him, but if I was daring to take them, and I would have took them, and he would have went a way different way. But no, we mainly focus on keeping everything in tight and make sure that if we strike, then it's going to be worth it.
And so, you know, for those that don't know, let our listeners know, you know, where exactly you train, you know, who you guys are, because, you know, not a lot of people are familiar with your group. You're still kind of a young, small, up and coming group in Kentucky. So, you know, just tell our listeners, you know, where you guys are, who you are, you know, your coach and some of your notable teammates we should keep an eye out for.
Yeah, we come from like a really small town. Our gym's like smaller, but Tyler Christman is our main coach. Zach Fox, he's amazing. He's one of the coaches too. He helps a lot. We're LKA, basically Lee Kickboxing Academy. We used to get confused to be a MMA school, but we're mainly stand up Muay Thai. But Randall Ross, he's really good too. He'll be a good up and comer whenever he gets his flow back.
Yeah, undoubtedly. He's a big monster. I've always enjoyed watching him.
Yeah.
Now, with that all that being said, now, you've not had a chance to really address the panel. Like we said, you know, they picked against you, you know, 5-0. But we do have one of those panelists on here with us. That's Alan Poole, and he takes a majority of those photographs there for the Valor Fights events. So I was going to let you maybe talk, you know, person to person with him right now. Alan, do you have any questions?
I'd just like to point out first and foremost, I am a photographer. I'm not a trained killer like Casey or any of these other guys that are on here. I just talk shit, right? That's all I do. Take pictures.
For disclosure, Alan actually wasn't there, but he did watch the video here with me. So he did see the fight. He wasn't there, but he got to see the good footage of it. He did agree that you definitely looked good and won.
Yeah, man, you definitely proved me wrong. And what I was going to say, I was secretly pulling for you. I had my fingers crossed when I picked Rodrigo. But no, just kidding.
Yeah.
I owe you some pictures. I know guys usually aren't excited about that, but every fighter needs some legit pics. So if next time you see me, if I'm anywhere near you, make sure you grab me and make sure I get a decent photo of you or of you and your girl or whatever.
All right, Derek, real quick, if you want to go ahead and give some shout outs where they're due. You've already mentioned your team, but you know, all your friends and family and so forth, the sponsors that have supported you along the way. And of course, all your social media plugs, the places we can find you, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and so forth.
Well, my Facebook's just my name, Derek Smith, DERRICK. My Instagram is walking_deadman. I'm pretty sure it's in that order. I want to give a shout out to my main coach, Tyler Christman. He has brought us all really far along. He's helped us all throughout our whole journey, and he's an amazing man. I want to give a shout out to Zach Fox. He didn't get a fight last time, but we're coming back in March, and he's going to make a dominant comeback.
All right. A big round of applause goes out to Derek Smith, our first redemption guest. Derek, thank you for joining us, and we look forward to seeing a lot more of you in the future.
All right. Thank you guys for having me.
We are joined by the Asian Persuasion, Jason King, as he prepares to face Stephen Haig January 6th at Valor Fights 47. Jason, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Not your first time on the Valor Hour here, man, so welcome back. Excited to have you coming up here in Knoxville, not too far off now, just about 3 weeks, and you went from being the co-main event to the main event here just in the past week. Talk a little bit about that and, how exciting that's got to be, headlining a show in Knoxville, your new hometown now, and at the Coliseum, no less.
Oh, yeah, no, it's very exciting to be the main event. I've talked about this before. My entire professional amateur career can kind of, it all goes back to, Valor Fights. Back before it was Valor, it was 3FC. I made my amateur debut there. My professional debut was Valor Fights' first all pro card. And, here I am, nine fights into my pro career, getting to headline a Valor Fights card in my hometown, and it's a blessing. I'm thankful for it, and I'm thankful for the opportunity. And it's with a great opponent, with a quality opponent, with a good guy, just in and out of the cage. So it's just something I'm looking forward to, and I'm blessed to have the opportunity to get out there and showcase my skills and get my name out there. It's been a fun ride, and it was a fun ride as a co-main event. It's going to be an even more fun ride as a main event.
Right. So you said, a couple of nice guys and that's it. And when I say this, you've heard of good cop, bad cop. It's more like nice cop, nicer cop, if you will. I mean, you guys are just, you always have a smile on your face. You're friendly and, but you guys both bring a certain level of destruction in your game, and sometimes can be contrasting. He's kind of known as the grappler, the pedigreed grappler who will come out there and throw, while you are known as the pedigreed striker that's very full of flash and so forth, but will mix it up on the ground when you need to. Talk about this fight and how you two match up.
I think it's a great matchup. Stylistically, you know, on paper, you're right. It is very much like the traditional, like, you know, UFC one mix of style versus style. You know, on paper, he is a high level jiu-jitsu player. I'm a high level striker. But at the end of the day, we're both MMA. We're both professional mixed martial artists, and we both can mix it up. You know, just because he is a high level grappler doesn't mean I have been slacking on, you know, his striking abilities. And likewise, you know, I think he's a very smart opponent. I don't think that he's taking, you know, his high level grappling pedigree and not regarding what I have to offer on the ground. You know, I like this matchup with Haig. He's a great guy. And I think we share somewhat of the same mentality of, you know, outside of the cage, we can be friends with anybody. He's one of those guys, when I see him at weigh-ins, I'll shake his hand, I'll ask him how he's doing. And then, you know, once that cage door shuts for anywhere, as long as it takes, up to 15 minutes, we're going to be violent. It's not personal at that point. It is our job. It's our job to be violent. It's our job to be, you know, fighters, to be finishers. And I expect the best from him. I only want the best from him. And I expect nothing but the best from me. So this is just a great opportunity to do that with a class act guy. And like I said, at the end of the fight, the time for violence is over. And, you know, whatever, regardless of the outcome, we'll give him a hug and we'll be closer friends for it. So it's a great matchup with a great guy. I'm excited to have this matchup in my hometown.
So what's changed since last time out? You know, it's been, you'll have had, you know, about, you know, 3/4 of a year or so off since your last fight back in May at Border Wars, a tough one against Brandon Bell. And I think, you know, a lot of people know that Jason King's one of our favorite fighters at Valor. You know, that goes without saying. But that also goes without saying that I put him in freaking deep. You know, I make him fight tough, you know. And in his last one against Brandon Bell, who's a big bruising experienced guy, you know, you've gone on and done and kind of upped your strength training, from what I can gather, over the last several months. You know, it seems like the guys that have given you a little bit of trouble in the past have been those just kind of brutish, kind of just raw strength kind of guys. And now you've been with Frankie's and really been shoring that end of your game up, it looks like.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, I didn't take any time off after this fight. You know, I have taken a break from competition. And, you know, part of that was because I needed a break. Part of that was because, you know, just fights weren't lining up the way we needed them to, as far as, you know, timeline with everything else. But, you know, everything happens for a reason. You know, my strength and conditioning has improved more and more since then. I think Vince, in that same span of time, has had 3 fights in the UFC. And, you know, Vince trains with Frankie as well, so whenever he has a fight camp, I have a fight camp. That's the way Frankie sees it. So
hey, you know, Jason,
I love training.
Jason, yeah. Hey, this is Alan. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Yeah, you're fine.
But my question is directly dealing with, like, Frankie's, and, you know, I've only been to Frankie's a couple times, and, you know, I got some shots of you in Ovince. And by the way, Jason King can jump out of the room. He can jump out of my picture frame. Like, dude's got some ups on him. Anyways, is there some kind of secret sauce that KMAA is using now at Frankie's? Like, what's going on there? Like, I feel like there's some kind of, like, swagger, you know, like that's come off of, I don't even know what's going on. If it's just good vibes at KMAA right now, or what's up, man?
I mean, it's a combination of a lot of things. I'm blessed not only to have KMA and Frankie's Body Shop in my life, but that the fact that they're not two separate families. You know, we are very much an integrated family at this point. So anything that we do at Frankie's is known by Eric and Joey, and anything that I do with Eric and Joey is known by Frankie. So we are constant communication with each other, you know, what we need, what each fighter needs. And, you know, strength and conditioning is a super important aspect for me, for the obvious reasons. You know, you do need, you know, have your strength, you need to have your conditioning up, all that stuff matters. But, you know, strength and conditioning is also mental strength and conditioning, you know. And one of the big things that both gyms have, you know, helped me and every other fighter in, you know, that trains with us is, you know, we don't we don't quit because things get hard or things get daunting. We don't view them as hard or daunting. It's just, you know, it's fun. It's an exciting challenge. So, you know, if you look at my last fight, it didn't go the way I wanted it to. I mean, at no point am I ever going to give up in a fight. Doesn't matter how banged up I am. Doesn't matter how, it doesn't matter. And that's kind of the case with everybody. That isn't something that you necessarily get. I mean, it is something that's learned, and it's learned through hard work. And, you know, Cam and I, we put in the hard work physically, but we also put in the hard work mentally. We have a mental skills class that happens weekly. I have weekly meetings with Eric outside of that. Every time I go to Frankie's, he does his level best to try to break me and just to prove, you know, to him and to myself that that's not going to happen. You know, as far as any swagger, like you put it, that you feel like that the fighters have, you know, it's always been there, but we're just finally letting it out. You know, and lately, you know, just life is aligning the way it's supposed to be. And I feel better than I ever have. I've, like I said, I've aligned my life in a way that best suits me. And you guys get to see the best package I've ever been able to bring into competition.
All right. Well, real quick, Jason, go ahead and give your shout outs where they are due. And of course, as always, we need your social media plugs where we can follow you, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and so forth.
Okay. Guys. Yeah, for sure. Thank you. First off, thank you, Valor Fights and the Valor Hour for having me. Great promotion. I love performing for you guys. Thank you to my gym, Knoxville Martial Arts Academy, Frankie's Body Shop, FBS Combat. I'd also like to thank my sponsors, 7-5 Clothing. You guys have been fantastic. Wally, shout out. You guys are fantastic. You can get my walkout shirt at 75clothing.com. And also the Mad Tatter Studios. You guys have been with me since like the very beginning. I can't show appreciation for you guys enough. As far as social media goes, if you follow me on both Facebook and Instagram, on Facebook I'm the Asian Persuasion Jason King. On Instagram I'm Asian Persuasion _MMA. But I'll be doing some giveaways for some tickets here in a little bit, so definitely check me out there. See if you can get a free ticket to the fights. Here come January 6th.
The Asian Persuasion Jason King returns to action Saturday, January 6th. At Valor Fights 47 as he faces Stephen Haig in the main event. Jason, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
We are joined by WMMA standout Olivia Parker as she prepares to face Erica Camp January 6th at Valor Fights 47. Olivia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure, Olivia. We got another one coming up here, January the 6th. You'll be taking on Erica Camp at Valor 47 at the Coliseum in Knoxville. Coming off a win, though, in October to move you to 4-0. That fight coming in Virginia. And, at first, if you want to talk a little bit about that one, just kind of get us up to speed on what's been going on with you since the last time we saw you, which was back in Maryville in June. So you've been able to stay fairly busy getting four fights in less than, probably about a year and a half, I guess.
Yeah, it's been a ride. So far they've gone well. I'm working on, keeping the process that we work on at the gym going and continuing to grow and get better in each fight. And that one, the last one in Virginia, was crazy exciting for me because my opponent was really game. I've had three fights with some good opponents, but I've just, I've landed in some good shots and gotten out of them pretty quick. And this one actually went into the second round. And so for me, it was an opportunity to answer some questions that I had about myself and in the cage. Some things went wrong. I tried to take her down and nip on the bottom, and I was able to just kind of, I stayed calm in the fight, and I rolled her over and, continued to do my thing. And I was just really excited to see, to get out. Okay, I got in there. I got hit a lot. Something, my face got beat up for the first time. I was so excited about it. I was like, I have a black eye. To get out of there and not freak out and just do my thing and listen to my coaches. And I could hear Eric talking to me during the fight. And for the most part, I did what he told me to do. So that's always a good thing. And I'm, you know, I'm just excited to continue to grow.
Well, Olivia, of course, we've talked about it before. We had you on just after your fight there at the Shed in your hometown of Maryville. But you are a teacher there, and you you know, have a very unique background sort of coming into mixed martial arts. For the viewer or the listeners that aren't aware of you, go ahead and give a little bit of the background, you know, your everyday life, and then also a little bit more detail into your training there at KMAA.
Okay. Outside of the cage, I guess I am a teacher at Heritage High School. I teach 11th grade English, and I'm currently working on my master's in history. And I've got two boys, Kyden and Cameron, and they're 6 and 8, and we're just busy. And as far as how I got into MMA, it was an accident. Actually, I was trying to lose weight. I entered a weight loss competition, thought I was taking a Taibo class. Turns out, dun, 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 it was an MMA class, and that's kind of where I went from there. I've paired up with Eddie with A's Health Shop to do, you know, a lot of, for my diet and exercise regimens that I've been through Marvel My Fitness. Shamir is helping me out with, you know, continuing to drop weight, because what I'm learning is that the more weight I lose, the more fights I can get. So we're just trying to, you know, drop weight and get as small as we can get and be in greater shape as I can be. And right now I'm real happy where I'm going in my progress. I feel like Shamir's got me set up in a great workout today. I can't hardly walk, because she hit my legs real hard this week. So she's doing a really good job. I feel like I'm in the best shape of my life. And so it's going great.
Well, we are also joined by, of course, photographer extraordinaire, Alan Poole, a guy that spent a lot of time there with you guys at KMAA. Alan, any questions here for Olivia?
Yeah. Hey, Olivia, what's going on?
Not much. How are you, Alan?
I'm doing all right. So, yeah, full disclosure here, I've grappled with Olivia. Olivia's kind of put me in my place. I'm not going to say that for sure happened, but maybe something like that happened. So, speaking of you being a teacher and going, you know, you're working on, what is it, your master's and whatever, and, like, I'm trying to, like, create kind of a picture of who you are and how, like, diverse you are as a human being, because I saw you in Walmart the other day, and you were with your kids. You had your kids in your shopping basket, and you know, we're talking like MMA stuff, normal. And somebody had like cut like right behind you, kind of like, I don't know. I didn't tell you about this, but someone behind you, like, kind of, I don't know. They cut behind you in a kind of weird way. And I was thinking, if you actually bumped into her, what would really happen? Like, and you don't look like it. You know what I mean? I know you're very composed and you're a very nice person and you do great in public, but it's a different story once you get inside that cage. So can you, and the person that, so we go from you being a school teacher to fighting Erica Camp, who, from what I hear, is from the hood, like the hood, right? And she's known as Ebo, right? From like Debo from Friday, but they call her Ebo. So there you are working on your education. You got your kids in your basket and you're fighting this woman. How does that work?
You know, it's fighting, and that's what it is. And you're throwing punches and everything else, but it's a competition. It's, I'm going to go to the gym and I'm going to work as hard as I can. I'm going to be as good as I can. I'm going to walk in there. We're going to play the game. Who can touch you the most? Who can take you down the most? And so when I'm in the cage, I'm not angry. I'm not mad at him. I mean, it's a basketball game, or, you know, it's whatever it is. And I'm just going to beat you. I mean, that's just kind of whatever it is that you're going to do. You know, I'm going to do the things that I'm supposed to do, and I'm going to try to beat you, and you're going to try to beat me, and I may lose, and that, you know, and, or you may lose. One of us is going to go down, but either way, we're both going to go as hard as we can for as long as we can and do what we can do to, you know, to beat each other. So I guess I don't go in there and like flip a switch and go, I'm going to kill this person. I hate them. I get in there and I'm just kind of like, well, here's time to go. Time to play the game. And your adrenaline goes up for real. But at the same time, it's just, you know, in my head, it's not, I don't like this person. Because I feel like when it's over, that person almost becomes family to you. They for 9 minutes, no one understands you in the whole world more than that one person does. And so I feel like, it's kind of like we go in there together, not apart from one another, because we're both getting locked in there together. We're both, nervous. We're both about to get punched in the face. You know, I mean, sure, it's by each other, but, you know, we're experiencing the same thing at the same time. And so it just kind of, I guess I don't get angry. First of all, 'cause I don't want to like black out, but it's just, you know, she's doing what she's supposed to do. And I've trained to oppose her, and she is trained to go against me. And we're both going to just see who, you know, whose process is better.
That's great. So I didn't mean to cut you off, Olivia. I didn't know if the average person or the, you know, average fight fan understands what I'm trying to bring out is that you're just a regular person walking down the street that just happens to be able to bust about anybody's ass, like on the spot.
Well, I'd probably be clutchier than the average person on the street.
As you said earlier, you've been fortunate to be able to stay pretty active. You know, the divisions for females at 170, 185, they're shallow, to say the least. There just really aren't a whole lot of ladies competing in those weight classes, and especially the better ones. You know, you're already at the top. And so to find ladies, you know, that are good and skilled, it is definitely more difficult. So I'm excited for this matchup because, you know, while Erica doesn't have any fights yet, she has trained, you know, for over a year and trains with a pretty noted camp at Killer Bees down in Cleveland. So it's kind of one of those matches where, you know, I think that even with her being 0-0, I think she's going to be a really good test. Obviously, her coaches know that, you know, they've seen you fight and they're willing to put her in there for her debut. Talk a little bit about the matchup and what we can expect from this one. It's going to be, you know, a big show in front of a large crowd, what I would imagine would be the largest crowd, you know, either of y'all competing in front of yet.
We know very little about Erica because she hasn't fought before. So honestly, I mean, at this point, it's just going to be me going in and working on the things I need to work on and doing me the best that I can. I'm going to try to listen to my coaches better, you know, to stay more centered inside of my head, you know, as opposed to you get in there and you just kind of go. So trying to be more controlled and, you know, just doing my process, because there is no tape to watch on her. I mean, I don't even know how tall she is, to be honest with you, at this point. So it's just like, she's almost, I mean, she comes from a great camp. So she's definitely, as an opponent, we respect her. We respect her camp. We know they're going to come in. They're going to be ready to go. She's going to be on her game. And that's what we want it. But as far as like completing a fight plan for her, you know, there really can't be one, because we don't know. I mean, so in that way, it's just kind of, I prepare to be the best me that I can be and then go in there and use whatever I have to take, you know, to handle whatever she's going to throw at me. Cause we really don't know. So it should be interesting and fun. Because like I said, she does come from a very good camp. They say send out some great fighters, and we know that she's going to be game, which is really exciting. And, you know, just got to get out there and do my thing and hope that, you know, it's what needs, you know, I know it's what needs to be done, but, you know, hope that that I go in there and do my thing the right way.
All right, Erica. What I'm going to do, though, is I'm going to give you an opportunity right now to give your shout outs where they're due. Of course, you've already mentioned KMAA and your team, but also, you know, everybody along the way, you know, your students, everybody that supports you and follows you in your career. I'm going to give you the opportunity to give a shout out to those people, and then also your social media plugs.
All right, awesome. Well, you know, of course, my training partner is at KMA, and then at Heritage High School, the administration and the students, as well as the teachers, have all been a phenomenally awesome support system for me. They're helpful. I got teachers that eat my diet with me when I'm on my fight diet, so appreciate them, as well as my family, who, you know, travels with me, goes everywhere that I go as well. If you want to follow me, I'm Live for MMA on both Twitter and Facebook. And then my Instagram account is LivParker813. And then, you know, just my sponsors as far as Fighter Alias, Quaker Steak and Lube, Zeus Electric, Little Valley Haven. And just thanks to all them for doing a phenomenal job and supporting me, because this is not an easy thing, you know, to do. And it's nice to have that support, because without it, we wouldn't get.
Olivia, you know, it's you mentioned Quaker Steak and Lube. You know, Tim and I actually went into the Quaker Steak there in Sevierville, Sevierville/ mm-hmm. Pigeon Forge, and everybody knew you. We came in talking about mixed martial arts, and they immediately brought your name up. So what you're saying there, I mean, your name definitely resonates throughout the region. Everyone, be sure to head out to Valor Fights 47 January 6th. Olivia Parker will be in action against Erica Camp. This one is one you don't want to miss. Olivia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, guys.
We are joined by WMMA standout Erica Camp, who heads into Valor Fights 47 as she faces Olivia Parker. Erica, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Always a pleasure to have a new guest. Erica, your first time on the Valor Hour, so welcome. And, you know, you're getting ready for your highly anticipated debut. You know, you're making your first fight January the 6th at Valor 47 at the Coliseum in Knoxville. It's a big event to be making your debut on. A lot of the times, you know, people will come out for smaller events for their first debut. You'll be jumping right in to the fire here against an opponent already undefeated in Olivia Parker. But, you know, training with American Killer Bees there, I know they'll have you ready. Talk a little bit about, you know, the excitement coming up for this fight and, you know, just a little bit what we can expect, you know, what you think about your opponent and whatnot also.
I'm actually very excited. It's been a long time coming. Been training for almost 2 years now. So I'm pretty level-headed, pretty calm going into it. I've studied some of how the our gym's history of the opponents from KMA. And I respect her as my opponent. I know she's undefeated, of course, and going to this huge venue. You know, it's a big ordeal, but I know my confidence is in my cardio, my reach. Honestly, I don't think she's not going to get past that, keep her moving. I'm definitely going to bring in something different that she's used to. Just make her play my game and have fun. But I'm definitely more than ready for it. Just very calm, level-headed, just ready to raise the bar for women's MMA for Valor Fights, most definitely.
Erica, so let's talk about your team a little bit there at American Killer Bees. Of course, David Robbins, you've got Billy Swanson that you're training there with, but then also guys like Sid Wheeler rolling through on occasion. Talk about some of the people you're there sparring with, training with, but, you know, because you're in the higher weight classes, there aren't, you know, typically a lot of, you know, females out there necessarily for you to spar with, but that doesn't matter. That group there is an A-list of talent to work with. Talk about your training.
My training. So I walked into my gym. I was the only female there, of course, when I first started at American Killer Bees with David Robbins. And I don't know, I guess my personality, I walk in and I'm trying to pick a fight with the biggest dog in the room and try to see that I can hang. And I ended up toughening me up. I learned a whole lot. Like you said, Vasily Wheeler will come. Our head coach, Israel Gomez from Florida, you know, we got constantly people dropping in the gym. Get pick apart knowledge from each one, but most importantly, David has really shown me a whole lot, and I've grown a lot from him as my coach. He really took me under his wing, showed me a whole lot through the game, and but yeah, it's definitely challenging when I'm have everyday spar partners as people like David, Billy Swanson, all these heavyweights, you know, guys that's been experienced. But at the end of the day, I think it's done me well, so I'm more than prepared for the fight.
Excellent. Well, I've also got Alan Poole here on the line with us. Of course, he does all the photography. There are a vast majority of the photography there for Valor Fights and always sends over a bunch of great shots. But he also is an enthusiast of WMMA. Alan, any questions here?
Yeah, of course, man. Hey, what's up, Erica? I have not had a chance to meet you in person, but I am looking forward to it. Hey, even though I am friends with Olivia and, you know, their family, and I know them and all, I mean, a fight's a fight, and I like a fair fight. And like Casey said, I am a huge fan of WMMA. Now,
right?
Okay. Now, having said that, look, I'm around gyms a lot. You know, I've done a little bit of training here and there, and I know that what happens in the gym stays in the gym, and that's code. You know, that's how it goes. However, I'm going to have to break that rule because I heard that you rocked Billy Swanson the very first time you guys sparred. Please elaborate.
Yes, I will probably tell you the story. This was actually at MMA Institute when I first met Billy Swanson. He's my original, you know, training partner. That's actually where I started MMA for a couple months. And I walk in the gym, of course, the only female. And Jeremiah Gurley, my coach at the time, he's like, hey, put on some 4-ounce MMA gloves. I didn't know how to spar. I didn't know nothing, what was going on. But all I know is I better buck up because I'm the only female. You know, I got to prove a point. And he, you know, I guess Jeremiah Gurley told me to take it easy. She's a girl. She's new, you know. And I'm a kind of type of, you know, if I sense that, I'm going to get mad. I'm going to keep pushing you till you fight back. And he kind of took it easy on me, and but he popped me a few good times. I just got mad, and I hit him pretty hard. And ever since then, me and him are going at it. ever since today, even so. But no, he's a really good guy. He's a good friend of mine.
Yeah, I love Billy. He's a fantastic guy. But I'm just glad that we got that out there, and we got it recorded, and just so I can replay it to him over and over.
All right, Erica, go ahead real quick. I'm going to give you the chance to kind of go over, give us an overview of your, you know, your thanks and your shout outs and any sponsors that you may have picked up. Of course, you know, your team, your friends, your family. And then also, we need your social media plugs, okay? I know, you know, WMMA is a growing network, and so everybody wants to be able to follow you. So Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and so forth. Give us those plugs.
Okay, I just wanted to give really a shout-out to my coach, David Robbins, American Killer Bees. Israel Gomez of the American Killer Bees in Florida, Melbourne, Florida. Of course, WMMA. Valor Fights. It's really about it. And my training partners at the gym. That's about all I got for you.
All right, and your social media plugs as well. How do we find you?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear that part. I'm on Facebook under Erica Camp. Instagram, LadyE_93.
All right. Excellent. Erica Camp heads into Valor Fights 47 on January 6th as she makes her debut against Olivia Parker. Get your tickets now on Ticketmaster.com. Erica, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, that closes out a great lineup of interviews, as well as another episode of the Valor Hour. Remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, as well as Stitcher, and please share this broadcast. We return right here next week as we continue our discussion on the biggest combat sports news from around the globe. A huge thanks to our great guest this week, as well as a huge shout-out to Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl for their tremendous support. For myself, Casey Oxendine, and Valor Fights President Tim Loy, this has been the Valor Hour.
For more information on upcoming events, visit ValorFights.com or find them at Valor Fights on both Facebook and Twitter. This has been the Valor Hour, powered by the law offices of Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl on Radio Influence. This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer, Quick Fix, on Radio Influence.
Paul White is a great guy, and I always love, I might have mentioned this in the earlier episode, but the guy puts a cigarette in his hand, and it looks like he's holding a toothpick, and the guy puts a beer bottle in his hand, and it looks like he's holding one of those mini, airplane bottles. The guy has huge, huge appendages, hands and feet. And it's just, I would certainly want to stay on the right side of Paul White for sure.
Well, speaking of Paul White, just really quick here, and this is not going to get any heat with him, but Would you say, looking at his career, obviously now that it's winding down, I think we can say that safely. Would you say he had better matches in WCW or in WWE?
Probably WWE. He was more seasoned. I mean, the guy literally had only had a few matches when he became the Giant. I remember we were in Chicago, I believe. They brought him in, and somebody was managing him at the time and trying to, you know, get him in. And they saw him, and they said, you know, pretty much on the spot, we're going to call him the Giant, and he's going to be Andre's son to play off the feud with Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant for WrestleMania 3. And they pretty much threw him in the ring and protected him for a while until he was able to learn a little bit more about the business. And so, I mean, the guy literally got thrown in there as a greenhorn and, you know, got a huge push. So I would say that probably WWE, only because, like I said, he was able to become much more seasoned when he went there and learned their style of wrestling. And he's had some good matches with Braun Strowman, even in the later parts of his career. He's had been some good stuff. So the guy could still go, but, you know, injuries take their toll, especially when you're that big a guy. And he looks fantastic. Last time I saw him, he looks as skinny as the first time I ever saw him in Chicago. So
I just remember seeing him doing drop kicks, and he came off the top rope a couple times in WCW, and I was
he could do a moonsault. Apparently, I never saw it.
Holy shit!
But I was like, why wouldn't they? You know, when I was riding with Kevin Sullivan, Kevin was booking him, and I'd say, why wouldn't you do a moonsault? Have him do a moonsault, and he'd say, Panther, he's the Giant. You don't want giants doing moonsaults, and I. You know, you got to learn the psychology of the business. You don't want giants doing moonsaults. And I'm like, but it would be so cool visually to see this big guy doing a moonsault. And not to mention, he'd probably kill the guy he landed on. They never let him. They protected him. And now that I know a little bit more about what I know a little bit more about, probably Kevin was right. But it's still, I'm gonna stick to the fact that it still would have been a cool visual, if not for one time.
I never told you that I had a weird run-in with the Big Show, the Giant, when I was actually in Tampa. Gosh, I was probably about, 12, 13 years old. We were at a Baskin-Robbins, me and my mom, my dad, my sister. So we're in there, and I'm looking at the flavors or whatever. So I'm looking at them, and I think I said something. I smarted off in there. Yeah. I smarted off. I said something to my dad, like, yeah, whatever, you know. And my dad didn't put up with much, but I don't know. I just pushed the limits. And anyway, I kid you not, I heard this voice from behind my dad say, I've got this. And I'm not even paying attention because I'm looking at the ice cream. Dude puts his hand on my shoulder. I turn around. He goes, don't talk to your father like that. And I swear to God, I looked up and I didn't know what to say. I couldn't say anything. I mean, not because I was awestruck, but I was scared to death. Oh, I knew exactly who it was. But I mean, it wasn't like someone just walked up to me like a normal size of my dad. I mean, this guy was a skyscraper. So I couldn't be like, oh, hey, such and such. I was more worried about.
Did you ask him for his autograph once you calmed down?
I didn't say anything, Dave. Literally, my voice was just gone. I feared for my life.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.